Gentlemen, please allow me to introduce Nick Birch, CTO of Quanticate. And he has a very hard stand in the last session before the beer. So please welcome him.
Thanks. Okay. So I can get a sense of which bits of the talk to focus on and which slides to skip over. Who here writes big data software? Anyone contribute to any of the big data projects here? Okay. Who here buys them or is thinking about buying? Not like the entire company. I'm not saying you're going to buy Hadoop, but like picking and commissioning software stacks, big data software stacks. A few people. Who here's got some work that they're already making use of, wants to know a little bit more, maybe make some changes? I'm a little bit worried about the people who haven't put their hand up because... Okay, well, we'll see what happens. So, I work for a company called Quanticate, which is a data-focused clinical research organization. Helps with running clinical trials, especially helps with gathering the data, analyzing the data, planning the data, that kind of thing. Nothing medical. We don't employ any medical staff. We let someone else deal with all those pesky patients, and we just worry about the data afterwards. I'm not a big data vendor. I don't work for a big data vendor. We just use this stuff. So hopefully I can tell you a little bit about some of the questions that you need to be asking yourselves, vendors, projects you might be using, to make sure that you're going to end up with the right kind of system. I will say the last time I gave this talk, I was banned from the conference by the sponsors who hated me for destroying all their sales pitches. I think the sponsors here are a little bit less evil, so hopefully that won't be an issue again, because I quite like coming here. Okay, so what is big data? The best one I've found that everyone kind of agrees on is more data than you can process on a handful of machines with traditional old-style methods. There are some people who've told me that they have a big data problem because it doesn't fit in an Excel XLS file. Not sure I quite believe that one. An awful lot of people who say they have big data problems because when they load the file in Excel, their machine slows to a crawl. I think if you're here, that's probably not going to be your definition. But an awful lot of people out there in business do kind of have that as their idea. Generally, though, if you're going for a big data system, it's going to have lower cost of storage than putting it on a SAN, at least. Higher scalability, but the important one is that bottom one. Trade-offs up front. You have to think some of these things through at the start, because if you do it at the end, it's too late and it's really painful and expensive. So, why now? Well, partly because we've got a conference. But VC funding for big data is an all-time high. There is a huge amount of VC money sloshing around, looking for firms to invest in and investing in big data firms. Those big data firms that are getting the investment have large valuations, they have very aggressive growth targets, which means that they're hiring lots of salespeople and trying to sell to people like you, people like me. Most of those salespeople are new to big data, and not all of them tell the truth. We're starting to see some clear winners coming out in the big data space, but there's still a lot of different companies out there, a lot of new solutions, new things coming up, new things you might want to choose. And it's starting to be possible to get help for this stuff other than by turning up to this conference and taking photos of people's class paths and code snippets and going home and frantically trying to recreate them. So, when I first started coming to the big data events, it was all people about how to actually get Hadoop to install and come up and stay up for more than 5 minutes, how to let your business people write some stuff. And it used to be kind of pure techie stuff, whereas now I'm starting to see, certainly if you go to something like Strata or those kind of events, more stuff addressing business needs, but also more stuff aimed at technical people saying, rather than this is how you get a cluster running, more about this is how you solve your existing business problems using this stuff. Any data scientists in the house? Anyone self-identify as a data scientist? No. Anyone have anyone in their business that would describe themselves as a data scientist? A few people? Okay. Anyone here trying to support those data scientists or similar? Okay. Anyone have business users being let loose on their big data systems, doing terrifying things with joining 20 terabytes of data with 20 terabytes of data? Yeah. It's a few people nodding and a few people looking terrified. Brilliant. Okay, so I'm not here to tell you what the ideal big data solution is for you. There is no silver bullet, despite the vendors ringing me up and emailing me about once a week trying to tell me that they've got one. What I'm trying to do is give you some ideas of the questions that you're going to have to ask yourselves and your business and so on. So, kind of big data there is, the questions, and how to go and grill your vendors. So, to start with, there was all the low-level stuff, which you probably, if you're a computer scientist, find really interesting. If you're more from the business side, not at all relevant. Your block storage, your locks, your consensus algorithms, leadership elections, all sorts of really low-level things that go together. Tending to be on top of that, you've got the job scheduling, tracking and execution, how you actually get the jar or the Python script out to the machine, how to schedule it, how to get it to run, how to find out when it fell over, why it fell over, restart it, that kind of stuff. Then we're starting to see some more stuff around the data tracking and workflow, which is, you know, what happens when you need more than one job, how you run one job, take the output, feed it into the next one, rerun it, a lot of the data plumbing. And then we're starting to see a lot more stuff around the security, the identity, auditability, all those kind of things now starting to go on. I will say, though, if you were thinking about using Kerberos, don't. Steve Loughran is probably at the back or out there drowning his sorrows. If you want to know how Kerberos goes wrong at scale, Steve Loughran's the guy to talk to. We're also starting to see a lot more stuff around operations information. You know, what is going on? Which user is it that just submitted the job that broke the cluster? Why is everything running really slowly? Is it because someone's unplugged the network cable or because someone's deployed a new release or you just lost Iceland or something? Then we've got these kind of things, which you need to probably understand roughly what they are so that you can make choices and deal with vendors talking about them. You probably only need to know the first paragraph of the Wikipedia page of these things. If you don't, that's kind of some homework for you. Who reckons they can kind of give a Wikipedia one paragraph summary of those things? No one? Okay, right. There's your homework for tonight over the beer. Because they're tackling the problem of storing and retrieving data in really different ways. And that matters because they're going to be really fast for some things and really slow and bad for others. So column stores tend to group data from one column together. So if you think about your Excel spreadsheet, that's a row-based thing. So it's you go across and it's got data from one row, from column, cell, next row, cell, which is fine if you've only got a small amount of data. But if you're tending to say, across all of my data, go and grab the values for the customer with this ID, then you've got the data grouped and stored based on a column, then certain operations are going to be really fast. But if you're trying to iterate over the whole thing, maybe not. Document stores and object databases, broadly places you chuck stuff that you might want to get back later without a lot of fast querying. You can just say, it's something, it's a blob of JSON, it's a blob of data, it's a 500 megabyte Word file, just sort it out for me, I'll come back later. Graph databases, it's not about the data, it tends to be about the links in the data. Starting from Nick, step out to things along the contact matrix, how many Germans have we got there? Starting from Jim Jagowski, if we look at all the people that he's ever been drinking with, how many of them are Swedish? Yeah, you can kind of step out, ask questions about the networks. Neo4j is quite a popular example of that. It was heavily used in all the Panama paper stuff, so that they could say, find me all the people who have in common this company here and this developing world scandal there. Okay, what have they got in common? Ah, possibly there's another scandal over here, so finding the links and analysing like that. Key value stores, generally very fast. Here's a key, here's a value, store it, retrieve it. Sort of like giant distributed hash maps. Does that kind of make some sense? Then you get the big data warehouse systems, which is putting some of this stuff together, more aimed at sort of business people, lots of data, and then the whole distributed computing systems that you can build on top of. Other things you have to sadly think about. Do you want it to be transactional, or are you happy with eventually consistent? When you make a change to your data, how quickly do you need everyone else to see that change? If you're a bank and you're dealing with someone's checking account, probably when they put some money in or take it out, you want everyone else to see that so that they can't double spend. If this is something that's tracking log files, does it matter if it takes 20 minutes for the log files to be visible in all of your data centers around the world if everyone only looks at it on a Friday afternoon? Maybe that's okay. What happens if things start going wrong? Do you want to stop, or do you want to carry on and figure it out later? Again, if you're a bank and you lose half your servers, maybe you want to say, let people add money but not take it out, or let people take out a small amount of money but not all of it until we can work out what's going on. If you're an e-commerce firm, you probably say, let's keep taking some money. But those are questions that you can have to ask the business people. When things start going wrong, what do you care about? And hopefully, the business people will have an answer to that. But the answer for Amazon is not going to be the same as the answer for your bank. It's not going to be the same as the answer for my business people. Is it okay to have half your data center not talk to the other half of your data center? Is it okay for things to keep working in that case? Is it good for things to keep working in that case? Or is that gonna cause you issues? Do you want it to be really available? Because generally, if you want its system to always be up, you're going to have to accept that most of it's always going to be up. Even if you've got Google-sized budgets, you're probably not going to be able to make sure that all of the system is always available. So what trade-offs do you want to make? Do you want to optimize for write performance or for read performance? Are you tending to have a whole load of data that just keeps coming in, keeps coming in, keeps coming in? Maybe if you're dealing with click tracking or logs or Internet of Things, all that kind of thing, there's data coming in all the time and you need to optimize your system for accepting that data all the time. Or is it something where once a night this data gets dumped out of another system and now you need to process it? If everything goes really well and your business picks up, do you need to be easily able to add more machines? Or are you happy with kind of sticking with this system and not really changing it? Do you want to be able to add machines at 3 a.m. and turn them off again at 6 when the batch processing is finished? Is it a really bad thing if your system automatically scales up and spills over onto Amazon EC2 and runs up a £10,000 bill because that business user tried to do the 20 terabyte join? Or is that actually really awesome that the system keeps working and keeps expanding and admittedly also keeps spending money? Your business people are going to have an answer on that. Your finance people might have a different answer on that. It's probably not your answer to come up with, but it's something you're going to have to discuss with users, with business people who are used to saying, here's a check for $500,000. Go away. Stop bothering me. I just want to buy Oracle. Yeah. And now you're saying, hey, guys, what happens if we lose a third of the data center? What happens if a switch starts failing? What happens if loads of users come along at once? Do we want to spend more money? Do we want to run slower? And initially, they're going to be like, look, that's what we pay you guys for. Just figure it out. But it starts becoming business questions again. And you're going to have to challenge your users to think about that stuff, give you sensible answers. Otherwise, you're going to build the wrong system expensively, and then they'll get grumpy later. There's lots of different solutions, but they tend to be tailored to different problem domains. Just because a system is used by the NSA or the CIA doesn't automatically mean it's the right system for you. Just because it's a system that Amazon uses for tracking shopping carts doesn't automatically mean it's going to be right for tracking your Internet of Things fridge data. So just because a vendor rings up and says we're used by Facebook and the NSA doesn't automatically mean it's going to be an awesome system and you should go and buy it. So, it all used to be simple. I think there were enough people in the room who were around in the bad old days of everything being relational databases. Right back in the very early days of computing, data storage was hard, expensive, and custom. Then as we moved kind of into the 70s and 80s and certainly into the 90s, everything moved towards relational databases and everything moved towards SQL. And it was relatively easy. You'd sit down with the Oracle sales rep, the Microsoft sales rep, the Sybase sales rep. You'd work out which relational database to buy. You'd check which DBA you needed to hire. You'd spend a load of money. You bought a relational database. Most things work with it. Occasionally you'd have to sacrifice a goat or get another DBA and all things, but everything was relational databases, and you could just do these trade-offs, and your business people were relatively happy with the fact that because Oracle did a better game of golf, that's what you were buying. You tended to just think about what were you going to install it on. Yeah, obviously, if you were a Unix shop, you probably weren't going to be buying Microsoft SQL Server. What speed did you care about? What was the licensing cost? If you added another 500 megabytes of memory to your server, what was that going to do to the licensing? But everything was relational. That's the way that we modeled the whole world. In some ways, that was easy. I mean, the solutions were really expensive and fell over a lot and generally caused all sorts of nightmares, but you were just buying SQL. You were just buying relational databases. That was all easy. NoSQL Now, it's probably been around 7-8 years, depending on who you talk to and where you define it. It used to be stuff that was non-relational and didn't use SQL, but actually a lot of the systems now do use SQL. And so you've got NoSQL systems that talk SQL, which can be a bit confusing, but I think most people are coming around to the idea of NoSQL not actually meaning not SQL. Not all NoSQL systems are big data. Not all big data systems are NoSQL. It starts to come down to buzzwords there. SQL is coming back more into the query systems that we're using. Has anyone here been to Berlin Buzzwords as a conference? Got a few of you. Were any of you at the bar camp about 4 years ago where we brought the SQL standards body in without telling anyone and trolled all the vendors for half an hour? No? That was awesome. SQL standards body were having a meeting in Berlin the same week as the conference, and we invited them in, and we got them to quiz all the big data vendors on their query systems. And there'd be like a bunch of guys at the front with giant bushy beards, and they'd sort of start off saying, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could have a query system that would do this and this and this? And then all the vendors would be like, yeah, yeah, it's a shame SQL doesn't do that. And they'd turn around and go, Jim, didn't you add that to the SQL standard in 92? And he'd be like, yes, I think I did. And it turned out that SQL doesn't have to mean relational. And it is actually possible to query a lot of big data systems using SQL, which is handy because business schools and business help books have spent 30 years training business analysts to kind of write SQL. And there's a whole load of business intelligent tools out there that are able to generate SQL and then graph it and draw it. So having SQL query capabilities on your system can be really important for getting buy-in from the people paying your salaries, the people who'll be signing off the budgets to let you go and buy that shiny new cluster or spin up that Amazon image. So don't necessarily ask your users if they care about SQL. Maybe ask them how they're expecting to get their data out, and then check what that system supports. And there's a fair chance, especially if it contains the letters B and I in close proximity to each other, that they're going to support SQL, and you're going to be able to plug them into the system, or you're going to need to put one of the many systems, I think HowSites one, as a layer between them that's going to let you query it, which so the users can get some stuff out. Okay. The boring questions that you're going to have to ask yourself. How much data are you loading in and how often? If you're loading in 10 megabytes every night, you're in the wrong conference. If you're loading in 10 megabytes every 100 milliseconds, you're going to be picking a very different solution to 10 terabytes every week. If you're going to be bringing in lots and lots of data very, very quickly, you probably need a streaming solution. If you're bringing in large amounts of data as a one-off kind of batch processing system, might be suitable. How much data have you got coming in, and how's that going to change? If your system is only just about going to be able to cope with the current volumes of data and things get better, or your system's down for a day and then you've got to catch up, that's not necessarily going to work. If your data volumes have been constant for 20 years and aren't changing, well, maybe you can spec something to 90% and it'll all be fine. If it's going to take you a week to add one more server to the system and you're not sure about your data volumes and your business users keep sucking through their teeth and looking a bit evasive, maybe that's not so good. Maybe you want to go for something where you can just add an extra machine and it'll magically use Zookeeper to find the rest of the cluster and bring itself online and repartition. Maybe you want to do that. But if it's all nice and static, then you can go for something that doesn't involve sacrificing goats to Zookeeper. How are you going to query it? Are you going to do batch queries? Are you going to need to do real time? Are you going to query on little subsets? Do you care about little moving windows across the data? Do you only do calculations on one user? Or do you need to do queries where you can look at all of the data across all of your users, across all of your fridges, across all of your Fitbits, all your bank accounts, whatever? Do you just fetch individual pieces of data? Because if you do, then maybe you can use a key value store. If you tend to only get little subsets of the data, column stores might be good because then all the data gets stored together. If you tend to scan through the whole lot, then something that clusters the data into little groups isn't going to work so well because the hard disk is going to have to seek, it's going to have to shift data around over the network, and you want something that's more optimized to a sort of streaming iterative model. If you want to calculate lots of aggregates, you're going to need to start thinking about how to shift the intermediate data sets around to sum them together. If you want the average number of purchases across all of your users on a 3-day moving average period, that needs all of your data available to most of the machines. If you're going to say, for the log lines, count up how many errors you got, that's fine because you can have one server over there that starts running through Tuesday's logs, one's over there that runs through Thursday's logs, and they both share one single number. That's easy. But if you're trying to move whole data learning models around, machine learning models, that kind of thing, that's going to be a very different problem because then you've got all this data that has to shift around so that everything can be in sync. You have to ask yourself about availability and complexity. Does it matter if this thing goes down for an hour, for a day? When you want to do an upgrade, is it okay to take the system down for a week? Or is that going to be a big problem for your users? If you want to try out a new learning model, if you want to try playing around with some of the reducer parameters, that kind of thing, is that going to be okay? Can you do that on the fly? Can you A/B test your solution? Or do you have to have really high availability guarantees? Reproducibility and data integrity. Within the industry I work in with clinical trials, the FDA would get pretty grumpy with us if we analyzed the same data set twice and came up with different ideas about whether or not the drug worked. They kind of, for that sort of thing, will want us to be sure that every time we run a calculation, we get the same answer. If you're working out whether or not changing the advert on your homepage made a difference in some click-throughs from people in Belgium, and one time you ran it and you got 13.2% and the other time you got 13.1%, maybe that's going to be okay. Maybe that's good enough. If you're trying to work out whether or not someone has any money left in their account, maybe getting the same answer each time is going to matter. So, another thing you've got to think about is how similar is all of your data? Is it quite heterogeneous, homogeneous? You know, if you've got lots of data that's all the same, you can optimize your solution for storing that set of data. If you're storing lots and lots of different things, you're going to have a more general solution available to you. How consistent is the data? Does it keep changing? So if you've optimized your system for one exact data format, and then someone in the marketing team just decided to add an extra field, is that going to break everything? Does that happen a lot? If you've got structured data versus unstructured data, whether you know you're just storing blobs of JSON or whether you've got nice fixed format, you know, your web blogs, that format was probably fixed in the early 90s and hasn't changed, so you can optimize for that. If you're trying to store machine learning models, they're going to alter all the time. You're also going to have to think about the IT support. If everyone else in your IT system is used to using Microsoft Windows and pushing things out with one-click installers, and you go and buy yourself a Linux-powered Hadoop cluster, your IT team are not necessarily going to be happy. They're not necessarily going to be able to maintain it, and you're going to need to pick a vendor that can help. If you've already got loads of people that know how to Dockerize stuff and spin up Docker images and maintain all that, maybe it doesn't really matter what you're going to go for. But make sure that the rest of your organization is going to be happy with what you've just gone and bought for them. Anyone here work in any regulated industries like mine? Pharma, banking, medical? Okay. Regulators tend to like lots of paperwork with that. And the way that you validate a system for banking is different to the way that you validate a system for pharma. The way you validate a system for pharma in the UK is different to the US. So the big data systems that you're going to be buying are going to be tested before they're released. Generally, they're going to have a green build before they're released. But just because all the unit tests pass doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be validated. You cannot go and buy an FDA-certified big data system. You can go and buy a big data system and then pay someone to do the FDA documentation for you. A system that works reliably in banking doesn't automatically work reliably in pharma. Just because a vendor says that the CIA bought from them and the CIA has lots of documentation doesn't mean you can just go and install it in a bank and have it magically work and have it magically produce that documentation. Also, this stuff changes. Yeah, you're going to install Hadoop 2.6 now. Maybe next year when it's out, you're going to install Hadoop 2.8. How much of that documentation are you going to have to rewrite? If it's a whole year's worth and you're dealing with a system that does releases every 6 months, that's probably not going to scale. So, within my industry, there's kind of two halves to it. There's drug discovery and then the drug development. Drug discovery has been using big data stuff since before it was even called big data. The development side, that's much more recent, mostly because for a long time the development side, it did actually all fit in Excel. Anyone here used folding at home? Anyone remember that? A few hands going up. So that was a big data system before anyone had kind of invented the name. It was a distributed computation system was what it was called at the time. It does get used in the drug development for protein folding, trying to work out what compounds might work, what if this compound is going to fit into this reaction site on a molecule. Does this virus fit through this cell membrane, and if so, could that be the trigger for this cancer? So that's the kind of stuff that's going on in the drug discovery side of pharma, and most of that's not using Cassandra. It's not using a lot of the frameworks that you hear about here, but they are tending to use a lot of the low-level systems for distributing their workloads around. I believe a lot of them are using things like Mesos and all that kind of thing to actually get the jobs out there and get them running. An issue I do have when I speak with people in pharma is they all swear blind they have a big data problem because they don't want to admit that actually the development side doesn't have the same problems that the discovery side has. Because big data's kind of seen as buzzword and sexy, a lot of people in business don't want to admit that actually you can still solve the problems on one computer in an hour, and therefore they don't have to go and buy a cluster and go and buy a whole new data processing system. They probably just need to hire someone to optimize their Java code so that it runs in 20 minutes, not an hour. But if someone in your business is determined to go and buy a big data system just so that they can claim that your business is important and it has big data, you need to take a very different approach to dealing with them and steering the salespeople than if your business genuinely has big data issues that it wants to solve or data that it wants to start analyzing. So at the moment, most of the trials that my company works on for sponsors involve 1,000 patients maybe in 10 countries for a few months. The volume of data involved is not that huge. What's changing, though, is these kind of things. If I'm putting one of these on a patient and it's measuring their activity every second, then 1,000 patients starts becoming a big data problem. If I'm doing a deal with the NHS to get access to patient records to start looking through for common factors that might explain why people are getting certain kinds of cancers, that's a big data problem. If I can go and work with one of the very big name pharma companies and get access to all of their trial data dealing with respiratory illnesses and then go and start looking for commonality patterns, start looking for other drugs people are taking that can make things worse, that's going to be a big data problem. Trouble with a lot of those things I've just mentioned is that it's other people's data. You start having to worry about privacy, you start having to worry about permissions. How do I make sure that someone is really doing a study to look at respiratory stuff and not actually trying to figure out what Angelina Jolie's medical history is? And so you start seeing the pharma industry looking at the intelligence agencies and how they're partitioning up their data, how they're applying permissions on the data to apply the same things onto patient privacy. So even though the big pharma companies probably aren't going to use the same data processing systems as the CIA, you want to go to a talk and find out how the CIA stops analysts looking at Syria from snooping on their ex-girlfriends in America, and then apply the same kind of pragmatic patterns, the same permissioning schemes onto your data when you're doing different kinds of calculations. So think about what can go wrong. Think about what industry is ahead of you on the curve that suffers that same problem and learn from them. Don't repeat the same mistakes if you can avoid it. Okay, so some questions for the vendors when you're speaking to them. How's it going to solve the problem you've got today? The one that's caused you to actually answer the phone call from the vendor or maybe go out and speak to a vendor. Then get your crystal ball out. How is it likely to solve the problems you think are coming? It's no good buying a system that works perfectly today if you're merging with one of your competitors and everything's going to change in 3 months and then you have to throw it away and start again. How are you going to document this? How are you going to validate it? How are you going to produce the documentation required to get this thing live? And what happens when there's a new patch comes out? when you start getting performance issues and someone says, oh, here's this alternate jar, just drop that in and see if that makes things go better. Can you turn on a bit of monitoring and see if this changed, if we try and reduce the percentage, how that's going to affect your performance? Is that going to be okay to do, or is that going to cause your operations people to spend 3 months rechecking the build before they'll let you put it out? If you've got structured data, make sure that the system you're going to be going for is going to work with it. If you've got unstructured data, make sure that the system is going to be working for it. Try and have a small data set that you can show to a vendor. The salesperson is not going to understand it, but their pre-sales engineering people might, and make sure that they can actually load it in. Make sure that your IT team are going to be able to actually deploy this, or at least let you set up some shadow IT to put it live. And then another important question, once you've got this installed and set up and running, and one of your competitors comes along and offers you an extra 20% in salary if you hop over the road and set it up for them too, can your company still actually keep the system you've built running? Can they hire in the expertise that's going to be required to deal with you getting hired, you having a baby, you having to go and look after your mother, all those kind of bus factor things? It's no good getting a completely bespoke system if it's not going to survive one person having a change in life circumstances. Okay. For anyone who's interested in some of the technical stuff behind it, once you've all gone and read the Wikipedia first paragraph on the different kinds of systems, I'll post these slides. These are some really interesting research papers into a lot of the fundamentals that underpin all of the big data systems you might be running or buying or selecting. The slides will be up in about 10 minutes. Probably easier if you just grab the slides and click through the links rather than taking some photos. If you want to know more, or you need to bring the rest of your team with you, or maybe your boss with you, don't forget the ApacheCon's moving over to America in the spring. There's Berlin Buzzwords for you European folks who want to go and drink nicer beer. That's around the same time. There's OzCon. Otherwise, look at Strata and Hadoop World and that kind of thing. Or go out into the sponsor area, ask the vendors what other events they're going to be speaking at. Think about some of those. At lunch, ask around, ask people what else is going on. Find out what mistakes people in your areas have already made. You can, if you want, go ahead and make the same mistake again, but at least try not to make the same mistake without knowing. Okay, I think there's probably beer outside. I haven't given you any answers at all. I've given you homework. I've given you lists of questions to go and bug your business people with. And you probably want a break. If you have questions on specific systems you have in mind, I can't answer them, but I might know someone who can. If you have general questions, I might be able to steer you. Otherwise, based on the variety of hands that went up earlier, if you don't know the answer to a question, probably the person sat next to you will, because you're quite a diverse bunch of interests and people here. Okay? Any quick questions, or do you just want to go and get beer?